Welcome once again, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Matt Blood, I am John Manuel. Thank you so much for the download. Thanks for joining us a little bit late here on a Friday afternoon. There's just too much going on. It's a Memorial Day weekend. I know you're getting out of town. Hope that you got this downloaded to your iPod for the nice drive. Enjoy the $4 gas. It will hopefully take away a little bit of the sting here with the Baseball America podcast. So Matt and I have been burning up the phone lines, the email, the IM, draft, and more draft. Matt, part of that was a fun trip up to Bristol this week to talk about the draft show with ESPN. Looking forward to working with those guys again.
You're such a big shot, John.
I know. It was a big shot weekend. Nothing says big shot like going into the Hartford-Bradley International Airport and buying ginger ale for your nauseous boss, Lee Folger. There's nothing more big shot than buying and opening a bottle of ginger ale for your boss. Let me just tell you that right now. So it's fun. It's a great time of year, but it's busy. But we love the attention this time of year. It's like everybody becomes a Baseball America reader. So, Matt, this time last year you were just a reader. We met actually physically at Zestos, correct? That's the first time we met in person?
That's right, but this time last year I was actually in St. Petersburg working with the Rays.
Okay.
But, yes, we did meet Zestos in the College World Series about a month later.
Which is awesome. Zestos, we don't know what's going to happen to Zestos when they move the College World Series, but obviously they won't be moving it too far, but they'll be moving it far from Zestos. So
I think I saw you at Zestos every time I was there. I don't know how that goes, but.
That's accurate. That's almost exactly accurate. So let's talk draft. Let's talk about the 2008 draft. Matt, you worked for the Rays in their scouting department last year as an intern. I was on a radio show the other day, and here was my take on the draft class. 2005, historic draft. 2006, supposed to be a down year, but really a historic draft in terms of pitching. The top of the draft, pitching-wise, was insane, and 7 of the top 11 picks from that draft are already in the major leagues, and 6 of those are pitchers.
That's right. From
the likes of Max Scherzer, Tim Lincecum, Andrew Miller, who pitched very well the other day, Ian Kennedy and Jabba Chamberlain were not even in that top 11, and they've already gotten to the big leagues. Brandon Moore is another guy. It was a crazy good pitching draft class in 2006. And I think that year we kind of panned that draft class because there wasn't depth and there were really very, very few hitters. But Greg Reynolds is in the big leagues. Luke Hochader is in the big leagues. Clayton Kershaw at 7, getting ready to go to the big leagues, by the way. So you're talking about some significant talent just from 2 years ago going to the major leagues already. 07 draft, hard to gauge that class. We're only 1 year out. I think going into last year's draft, it was a tough one to gauge because so much of the hitting talent was on the high school side.
Right.
With a little more hit or miss. How would you characterize this draft in relation to or in comparison to those three recent draft classes?
This year's draft is different in the fact that there's really not the top guy at the very top. You know, there's three guys that are all considered at number one, but none of them are considered overwhelming number one guys who just knock your socks off. And then like we've read over and over, they have all these first basemen in this year's draft, which is very rare compared to all the other drafts. And the pitching is also behind that 2005 draft, 2006 draft, like you just said.
There's a college starting pitching. This
right.
year,
it's
so
down.
Far down.
I hear that from scouts all the time. And you know what? They're actually relieved a little bit because they're like, oh, good thing we don't have to go watch all these Friday night starters with the three less weeks that we have now. With
great
the late
point.
Starting day. They're like, good thing there aren't all these Friday starters because we wouldn't be able to get in and see them all.
That's a great point. I hadn't even thought about that. And the thing is, you know, you look at last year, and I'm through pick 20, and I see three college starting pitchers in the first 20 from last year, Price, Detweiler, Savory. The big thing that last year had a lot of left-handed pitchers. I also had Nick Schmidt, who's already had Tommy John surgery. Aaron Pareda, James Simmons, who's now banged up, Andrew Brackman, another college right-handed pitcher. But you had a run on college pitchers, like in the second round, the Wes Roamers and the Barry Enrights and those kind of guys. Like,
did you leave out the Pirates pick?
Yeah, I guess I did. Daniel Moskos, you're not only considered him a starter. He was sort of was. I know he sort of is now, but
he's a completely different pitcher when he's a starter than when he is a reliever.
Exactly. He's a first-round guy, in my mind, as a reliever, but not as a starter.
Right.
As a starter, he should have been a 2-4 type guy. Mm-hmm. You know, a little bit of an overdraft for being left-handed. And he's a safe pick because I think he will be an effective big-league reliever. I think he'll be a very good big-league reliever, as a matter of fact. So this year, really, in terms of college right-handers, actually, is not that different from last year. You know, the first college right-handed pitcher last year was James Simmons. The second college right-handed pitcher drafted last year was Clayton Mortensen,
wow.
Cardinals 36, who I liked. I liked a lot coming out of the draft last year because he was a college senior, was still a little projection left, and now stuff. I like Clayton Mortensen. He's already been accelerated Double-A. I'm looking for another college right-handed starting pitcher, and that's it for the first 50 picks.
Wow.
That is amazing. And this year, you're going to have more than that. And that's the first complicating factor of this year's draft class is Tanner Shepherds. What happens to Tanner Shepherds last week? As we report on the blog, a stress fracture in the shoulder.
It's been really strange. People don't even really know what a stretch fracture is in your shoulder and how you get it from being a pitcher.
And that's the problem, is it's the unknown. And right now, if I were Legacy Sports, which to the best of our knowledge is advising Tanner Shepherds, I would be getting his medical out to as many clubs as I could to keep him in the first round. Because right now, Matt, like you said, right now the thing that's going on out there is the unknown.
Right, and teams are not willing to take a chance on this guy. They feel
not the unknown.
They feel that because it's unknown, it's a little bit sketchy, and they're afraid that it could be something in the labor. I'm not saying that it is, but I mean, if they're not given the information, then the information must not be good.
I'm telling you, I'm re-looking at last year's draft again. Tommy Hunter, 54, college right-hander, but maybe a reliever. Will Klein. Will Klein might have been your fourth college right-handed pitcher.
Yeah,
I know he did.
He and his great changeup.
Jordan Zimmerman at 5, Nationals. And I think going into the year, we actually thought Jordan Zimmerman out of Wisconsin, I guess it's Whitewater, Division 3, we thought he could have been the top college right-hander on the board last year, and then he had a rough spring. But Duke Welker, David Kopp, like I said, Barry Enright before. Not a good class last year. I honestly think this year's college right-hander class a little better than that.
Oh, yes.
And the thing is, it's perceived to be down. But now, that's why I actually looked it up.
Well, maybe
of course, it
would have
been better to do
six.
That before the show. Pardon?
Maybe it's just down from 06.
I think that's the thing. I think that what we're realizing is just how exceptional 06
right.
was.
I agree.
But 07, so the emphasis, the one thing you do have in this draft we talked about, you got college relievers, you got first baseman who can hit, but you have some up-the-middle hitters. And that's all. We're going to go over a quick mock top 10 here, Matt. And I think one thing for us is that I think the top 10 talents are kind of clear, even
yeah.
especially without Shepherds. I think the top 10 talents are pretty clear. Who's the guy in the top 10 for you who has the most upside? Is it Pedro Alvarez? Is it one of the catchers, Kyle Skipworth or Buster Posey? Is it one of the shortstops from Georgia, the Beckhams, Tim and unrelated Gordon?
As far as highest upside goes, it may not have as high a probability, but I think Kyle Skipworth, behind the plate, if he can stay behind the plate and use that strong arm that he has to throw runners out and then hit like people say he can hit.
Like nobody's business.
Yes. I mean, I think he went 16 for 16 at one point this
18
year.
18 for 18.
18 for 18, which, talking to some scouts out there, is just phenomenal, especially with the talent that he's playing against. And I think behind the plate, like I said, he can hit for power and average. He's left-handed swinging. Big guy. I mean, I think he might have the highest upside, along with Tim Beckham, playing up the middle as well at shortstop, and I've really heard that he's been playing exceptional lately. Finally coming on and really putting his full game together, hitting for power, making great plays in the field. I think those two guys probably have the highest upside with Pedro Alvarez. Pretty close behind because he's going to hit for amazing power, but he's not going to have the impact defensively that these two guys could have.
Right.
And he's not probably not going to hit for the average that these two guys are going to hit for as well.
There's a small chance in my head that the comp I can think that fits best for Pedro Alvarez, I think he has a small chance to be a left-handed Albert Pujols. That's who he looks like physically.
Right.
I don't know if the swing is quite as pure as Pujols.
I think Pujols hits for a better average than what Alvarez will.
I think there's a chance, it's a smaller chance, that Pedro Alvarez becomes kind of a left-handed hitting like Scott Rolen, but instead of gold glove defense, it's like average defense. But a guy who's like a 280, 290 hitter, oh, like 30, 35 home runs every year, I think that's what Pedro Alvarez is going to settle into. That's what
Scott Rolen was at in his peak. I mean, he normally had that line drive swing. People get all over him for hitting doubles off the wall. But
right. But he's a 6'4", 240 beast physically.
Right. So. Yes. And Pedro is going to be the same. He could be the same size.
Right.
And
I'm not sure he's as fluid an athlete as Rolen.
Rolen is unbelievable at their base.
Yeah. At his peak, obviously was.
Right. And Rolen's swing, like I said, it is more of a line drive swing, whereas Alvarez, he's got leverage and he looks to hit the ball a long ways.
Yep. Well, the thing with me and Kyle Skipworth, I agree with you. I think upside, that's why I asked it, and I don't think we talked about that yet. I think Kyle Skipworth does have the highest upside in this draft, but the reason he's not the 1-1 talent is, the track record of high school catchers.
Right.
And just how different it is to handle high school pitching and showcase pitching, and then to have to receive velocity and movement and late life.
This guy hasn't been catching all that long.
Yeah, it's
and
hard.
He's tall, and he's not the prototypical guy back there. I mean, he has a great arm, but he's what is he? Do we have
6'3", 195?
And then people say that he could grow to be bigger than that.
And that's the issue. And that's, to me, the track record of high school catchers. Just how difficult that transition is. Just how difficult that position is. That's why he has the highest ceiling, but that's why he's not the number 1-1 guy. Well, that's also why I think Buster Posey, because he's athletic, although this guy's also athletic. But Posey's athleticism, new to catching, but good at it, more physically mature, more of a known quantity. That's why Posey will go higher. But I think we both agree, we do not see Buster Posey going 1-1. We both think the Rays are going to take Tim Beckham. Well, we're both hearing that. We both think that's where they're headed.
That's how we feel. I mean, that could still change, though. I mean, Posey is a very good option for them there. Obviously, you don't draft just for need, but he is in a position of need with them, and he could get to the big leagues pretty quickly. But I think you can't pass up on a guy like Tim Beckham who can be your stalwart at shortstop, a position that really they haven't been able to figure out since
BJ couldn't hack shortstop.
Exactly. So they had Brendan Harris last year. I think they have
Jason Bartlett this year. Who's both, solid?
Yeah, they're solid guys. But I mean, you know, you want a guy in there who can be there, be your guy for a long time. You're not looking for somebody better.
This is a team with championship caliber talent almost everywhere else in the diamond.
Right.
I don't know that I can really catcher and shortstop, or where they really don't have championship caliber talent. And they have solid average guys.
Shortstop is they're okay because the guy can get it done.
Yeah.
Behind the plate, I think is where they are really, really weak.
And I said, Dionne Navarro is having a better year this year, but I don't think either of those guys are your championship profile. Doesn't mean you can't win a championship with them, but I think it's actually harder to win when you're bad behind the plate than if you can fudge shortstop. If you got a guy there who just can handle it defensively, he'll probably be okay.
Right.
But behind the plate, it's hard to think of a World Series champion who was really deficient at catcher.
You need a you got to be solid up the middle, and you need a good catcher in order to be a championship team. And that's the thing you always hear: don't draft for need. But this could be the one time when you might do it with Posey at number one.
And I've talked to two scouting directors who both said that, like, with you don't usually draft for need, but for them, they have so much talent everywhere else. It wouldn't be bad for them to go for Posey, and one of them specifically said, "I would never bet against Buster Posey." So that's also a fun thing to say.
Oh yeah,
it's the Baseball America podcast. I'm John. He's Matt. We're already almost 15 minutes in, Matt. We haven't even run through the top 10. Let's run through the top 10. We think number one is going to be Tim Beckham. Even after that's that little peroration we both gave about how good Buster Posey is. So.
I think there's just too much upside with Tim Beckham.
Wouldn't shock me on either way But it would shock me if they went in another direction other than those two guys. To me, their third most likely guy is Brian Mattis, because he's a left-handed pitcher. But their pitching is such in the minor leagues, I don't know that I would take Mattis 1-1
right.
if I were
well,
there.
Those two guys are the 1-1 candidates, and I don't see them either one of them getting past number three, much less I don't see either if Beckham does not get chosen by the Rays, I think there's a good chance that he goes to the Pirates. So I think it's about a 50-50 chance there. I mean, Alvarez is very similar to their situation they had last year with Wieters. You know,
right.
They pass up on Wieters, and people say, hey, there's no way they could pass up on Alvarez. But if Tim Beckham is available, that's a guy who should maybe go ahead of him.
The Pirates could certainly sell to people, look, Tim Beckham is every bit the talent, if not more of a talent, than Pedro Alvarez. He's a safer bet because he's the middle of the diamond player. And guess what? We don't have to give him a major league contract or $6 million right
exactly,
now.
Exactly, exactly.
So you can make the case all over the place with the Pirates taking a Tim Beckham.
But we're gonna go with Tim. We're going to go with Tim Beckham first.
We're going Beckham to the Rays, but I don't think he falls past two. I agree with you.
No.
And if he were somehow there at three for the Royals, he's they'd gone. Have to snap him up.
So these
or
first
snack
three picks – snack on him. These first three picks, we have Tim Beckham, Pedro Alvarez, and Posey, and I don't see it could be a combination of those three, 1-2-3, but we think it's going to go Beckham.
And I'll say this,
Alvarez, Posey.
All three clubs playing it pretty close to the vest. Really don't blame them. The Royals, there have been some ties to them in the last couple of years. They've taken Boris Kleins the last 2 years and Moustakas and Hochhaver. They have not shown – they don't run scared from clients represented by the Scott Boras Corporation.
Which is why I would not count Eric Hosmer out of that pick. I think
what about
gonna,
Pedro Alvarez? I don't think they would take Pedro Alvarez at three if he was there. Do you?
No, and the reason why is because I don't think – I think we're saying Posey's already been gone.
Not necessarily. If the first two guys are Posey and Beckham, yes.
Okay.
If Posey goes one and Beckham goes two and Alvarez is still on the board at three for the Royals, like I could see them taking Hosmer because with his arm,
right.
You could put him in left field or right field. He'd probably have fringe average range, especially early in his career. At best, he'd be below average down the line. But with that arm, you could certainly put him in the outfield.
Right. Right.
Whereas you wouldn't really do that with Pedro Alvarez. So I could see why they would maybe favor Hosmer, I suppose it's Hosmer, over Alvarez. But for me, I don't see them going that direction.
Right.
I see that they really, I think, would like Buster Posey to be there. I suppose there's a chance that this also would be a team that would take one of those two college pitchers, Brian Mattis or Aaron Crow at three. I don't think either of those guys really is a bad pick anywhere in this draft.
Either of those
guys are defensible at any spot in this draft in the top 10.
Right.
Four of the Orioles.
We were saying Brian Mattis.
I think that's what we're saying is that if the first three are Beckham, Alvarez, Posey, that Brian Mattis is your best player on the board at four, and Baltimore takes him. I think that's a pick that makes sense for the Baltimore Orioles.
And he's not far. He's not far away. I know they traded away Eric Bedard in the offseason, and it worked out pretty well for them. And Brian Mattis could be a quick fix for that.
I think so. I think Brian Mattis makes a lot of sense for Baltimore in a lot of ways. Five was San Francisco, first year scouting director for them, and John Barr, formerly from the Mets organization. To me, the Giants have got to take a hitter.
And I think it'll be Skipworth.
I think early on we heard a lot of Justin Smoke. But, you know, this team was aggressive with young hitters in the draft last year. And they were aggressive internationally 2 years ago with Angel Villalona. And I think they're going to be aggressive with a premium position player in Kyle Skipworth. And if you ask me who would I rather have, Skipworth or Smoke, I'd rather have Skipworth.
I agree.
I think that's the way they're going to go.
Like you said, he's got the highest upside in this draft.
Florida at six. Boy, I think Florida, if Skipworth is off the board, they're going to be unhappy about that in a lot of ways. And that makes sense. I mean, Posey or Skipworth would be fantastic for that team that has some young hitters, obviously getting it done offensively this year in the big leagues, and could use, especially a Buster Posey, boy, that'd be like manna from heaven for them with their catching position. They could move Posey very aggressively, and maybe they draw more fans than Florida State does, which actually they usually don't. But both those guys are off the board in this mock top 10 draft. Who do you think Marlins take at six?
First, I was going to say, I think Stan Meek, who does a great job with the Marlins, is rooting hard for those rumors we were hearing about Justin Smoke going to the Giants, because they do want Skipworth. But if that can't work, then I see them taking the South Florida native, Eric Hosmer, if he's still available. I don't see how they pass up on the bat.
And, does American Heritage outdraw them, too? more passes.
Might outwin them there. He hit more home runs. I don't know. Actually, no, the Marlins are having a great season this year.
They are having a great season, but no one goes. It's that's the way it is, unfortunately.
You need a stadium. You need a baseball stadium.
You do. The Cincinnati Reds at seven.
I know the Reds really like Gordon Beckham, but I don't think that you can take him ahead of Aaron Crow, especially in the Reds situation. So I see them going with Aaron Crow. If by chance Crow goes anywhere else, maybe the Marlins, if he does go to the Marlins or to the Giants, then I could see Gordon Beckham going to the Reds. But I really think Aaron Crow is going to slip to them.
I could definitely see Gordon Beckham going to those guys, because you always draft. You don't have to worry about the fact they have Todd Frazier and Chris Velika and Paul Yanez, other solid shortstops or middle of the diamond guys. If you like a middle of the diamond guy, you draft them. And if Gordon Beckham doesn't work out as a shortstop, or if they have other shortstops ahead of him, you move him to second, you move him to third. He's got the bat to play.
They really like him, and they really like him at shortstop.
Oh, yeah, no, I think he's a shortstop.
And I do, too. I got to see him three games this year, and I think he's close. I mean, he's got extreme explosiveness in his wrists and can really hit the baseball.
Number eight, Chicago White Sox. There are two rumors really being tied to them right now. Brett Wallace of Arizona State and Christian Friedrich, the left-hander with Eastern Kentucky. Those are the rumors that I've been told. I've had them debunked. I do think the White Sox also are a little bit different situation than they were 2 weeks ago with Dave Wilder, a director of player development, now out of the organization due to a international, basically a scandal, it sounds like, at their Dominican program. So we'll have more on Dave Wilder in the upcoming issue of Baseball America. But Wilder was involved in their draft, and now he's not. So there's a little bit different dynamic going on with the White Sox draft. I think at eight right here, if Gordon Beckham is there, Matt, they can't possibly pass on him, can they?
They have to take him there. After Gordon Beckham, I'm not real sure about things. Things get a little bit more murky. I think he is by far the best player. The only other option is Justin Smoke, I think, because he's still available. But
I would agree. I was just about to say, to me, the best players on the board, if Beckham goes at eight, which I think he does, then your best players on the board are Justin Smoke and Yonder Alonso. You have two premium hitters. I know there's a good class of first baseman, and Brett Wallace is really good, and Ike Davis is good, and David Cooper's good. But to me, those two guys are in a separate category.
They're in tier
just
one.
Just so much more polished.
Yes.
And so much more now. I think there's very little adjustment period to pro hitting for those two guys. Smoke tore up the Cape two summers ago. Alonso tore it up last summer. Smoke did struggle with Team USA last summer, but I think he's made those adjustments. Honestly, I think long-term, Smoke is the guy. I think Alonso will be better at the outset. He's only 6 foot, 6 foot one. It's a shorter swing. There's less going on. There's not the switch hit element. He has faced same-side pitchers in his career. Smoke never has, but Smoke's never really. If you're a college switch hitter, you're never getting pitched inside, ever, because you're never facing a same-side pitcher. So you're always, everything's away, away, away. I think there's a little adjustment period that he's going to have, and I honestly have a little seed of doubt in the back of my head about Justin Smoke after what happened with him last summer. So me personally, I prefer Yonder Alonso. I think the vast consensus of the industry is Justin Smoke. He looks better at first base. He's more the prototype guy. He is the switch hitter. I think Smoke at nine, the Nationals will be crazy to pass him up.
Right, I agree.
But then at 10, could the Astros... To wrap up the podcast, could the Astros take Yonder Alonso, or do the Astros have to go in a different direction?
I just don't see them going with Alonso. I think Alonso will slip just a couple more slots, and I think that the Astros will probably go with a pitcher at that point.
I think so too.
Maybe Friedrich.
I think if Tanner Shepherds were healthy, or if Brett Hunter were healthy, and Brett Hunter of Pepperdine, the right-hander, just came back. Would have been in this mix in that 10 to 20 range and now could be back in that mix fortuitously, really, for him. He comes back as as Tanner Shepherd's kind of exits stage right, you get lucky, really, if you're a scouting director, and you get Brett Hunter to watch again. But Brett Hunter, if Tanner Shepherd isn't the best arm in this draft, it's Brett Hunter. Just pure arm. That's, if it's not those guys, it's probably Garrett Cole.
Or Kastner, Andrew Kastner.
Andrew Kastner's in that mix, and Aaron Hicks is also in that mix, the high school right-hander out of SoCal, who, oh, by the way, also is one of the best high school outfielders in this draft. But after that top 10, Matt, if you're a scouting director, which maybe one day you'll be, who's the guy from this draft class who you have the best feeling on? Whether it's somebody you've seen or somebody you've talked to people on, maybe pick two or three personal cheese balls, guys that you really like. Whether it's their story, actually, whether it's the story you like or the player you like.
We're talking about later in the draft?
Later in the draft.
Because, in this first round...
You can pick Ethan Martin, though, if you want to. You saw Ethan Martin great. Saw his coming out party.
Well, I did. I saw Ethan Martin at his best, probably. And I saw him at the game of the year, I think, scouting-wise. Scouts were coming out of that game. It was against American Heritage in a tournament in Georgia.
LaGrange, Georgia.
And it was against American Heritage. And scouts came out of this game absolutely buzzing because Martin was a major league pitcher that night. He was throwing 95, 96 miles an hour. I think his first pitch of the game was 94, and he threw 130 pitches. And his last pitch of the game was 94 as well.
That's so awesome. I mean, that is awesome.
And he, in the first inning, he faced Hosmer and Nieto, struck them both out. Made Nieto look silly and froze Hosmer on a backdoor slurve curveball, which was a plus pitch all night long. So he's one of my favorites just from watching him pitch on the mound, but then also in the field he can play. He can play defense. He's got raw power. So I think he's a great pick, and whoever gets him is probably going to be in the middle of the first round, and they're going to get a good guy out of him.
I'm gonna interject because my personal favorite is not anyone I've seen, but I think Brett Lowry.
I was about to say, I didn't want to steal your thunder with Brett Lowry.
I'm having a hard time deciding my favorite guy. Is it Brett Lowry or is it Utah right-hander Stephen Fife? Stephen Fife, I need to try to find a scout who saw him at the Mountain West tournament the other day. Boy, Stephen Fife was not at his best with a lot of scouting heat on. He gave up 8 runs, 6 earned. Got to hear what the stuff was like, but he got instantly jumped on in the first inning by New Mexico, gave up 3 runs in the first. But here is a guy who does have some track record. He helped, he was the best player in his Little League team, took a Boise, Idaho team to the Little League World Series when he was 12. Was just undersized coming out of high school, but is a late bloomer physically. A guy who's holding his velocity, 93 in the 8th inning of a couple starts. Power, curveball, spinning a breaking ball at altitude, always attractive. Third pitch is there, solid average changeup, showing a decent slider as well. This is a guy, and in this year, in this draft, with the college starting pitching being down, I think Stephen Fife, who was like maybe a third to fifth talent, could rise up in the second round. But Brett Lowry, to me, is my favorite guy to watch in this draft. Best, like, Canadian hitting prospect since at least Justin Morneau, if not Larry Walker. And some would argue that the best hitting prospect actually in all that was Adam Loewen, who obviously was drafted as a pitcher as well, and not as a hitter. But Brett Lowry, fearless, borderline psycho. I've heard so many descriptions of this guy.
I've heard he works so hard, and he's got great makeup.
Compared to Dan Uggla, compared to Craig Biggio, I mean...
I can't get better than Biggio.
No, those are Craig Biggio comparison is a pretty doggone good comparison. Dan Uggla is a pretty good comparison, the way Dan Uggla's playing right now. Oh, and by the way, he might be able to play catcher. It sounds like most people think he can. So I'm all about Brett Lowry. I think he could go anywhere from 14 to the Twins to 17 to Toronto to the back half of the first round. I think he does have helium. I think we underranked him, thanks mostly to me, in our top 200. I think he needed to be higher than 37.
But he's there now. We got him.
Now, is Brad Holt one of your favorite guys or no?
I saw Brad Holt. I wouldn't say he's one of my favorite guys. He's got a very good arm. He holds his velocity. The ball explodes out of his hand.
But Scott Biddle is one of your guys.
Scott Biddle, yeah, I was going to say. If I had to name three guys who were really interesting to me, I mean, I'm not saying these guys are going to go first round, second
round.
Right. But Scott Biddle is a guy who... scouting directors and scouting staffs are just confused about. Some of them love the way that he misses bats. I mean, he misses bats in the SEC two times an inning. He strikes out a guy. And he's working off of a mid-80s cut fastball. He just locates perfectly at the knees, and it just dives just at the last second, and hitters either swing and miss, or it's a strike right on the corner. He does have a low 90s fastball that he shows only three or four times an inning, and he throws this split-finger-looking changeup as well, which is nasty.
Yeah, no one has performed in college baseball quite like him, really. I mean, it's
the only thing about him is he just doesn't profile as a closer, and to go in the first round or even in the supplemental, you probably need to be a starter or you need to be a closer. And some teams, that's why he's going to drop to the third round, but there might be a team that really likes his performance, likes his command, and likes how many bats he misses, and might snatch him up in the supplemental to early second round.
This is a relief pitcher who leads the SEC in strikeouts by a wide margin. That's
and
what I was looking
at. And
up.
He's a relief pitcher. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Minor of Vanderbilt is second at 91, but he's got 109 strikeouts. Actually, I guess Brian Morgado has 104 at Tennessee, which is also impressive for Brian Morgado to do that, a redshirt freshman. But, boy, Scott Biddle, for a relief pitcher to lead that conference in strikeouts, tells you it's just swing and miss stuff. It's special stuff.
When I saw him, he went three innings, and he was strong the entire time. I mean, so that shows right there he can be a guy that can be your middle relief guy in your bullpen, which is very valuable for a lot of reasons.
And can move quickly. He should be on an accelerated timetable. Who's your third guy before we get out of here?
There are two guys. There's a sleeper for me, Charlie Blackman at Georgia Tech. He's
right.
A very athletic, left-handed hitting guy who was a pitcher. He went into a summer league in Texas, and he hit some there, and he hit really, really well. The summer league coach calls up Danny Hall at Georgia Tech and says, "Hey, you might want to let Charlie Blackman swing it a little bit." And this year he's been outstanding.
I like stories like that.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, he hasn't hit a whole lot of home runs this year, but the home runs that I saw out of him in his bat speed, he's got power. I mean, he's just learning how to hit. I mean, his instincts might be behind, but he's got tools. He's got all the tools. He can run. He can throw. He can play defense. He can play center field. He can hit for average, and I think he will hit for power. So
yeah, go ahead.
And then on the other end, there's a guy that we talk about all the time, Blake Ticote down
in
Miami.
Yeah, we do.
actually, Aaron Fitt and I have a little bet going on where he's going to land over under third round, and it's not looking good for me because I took the over. So I don't know. I don't know if I should be mentioning him right now, but. No, he's a scrappy guy who I've seen him a couple times this year playing for Miami, and he's going to hit. I know he's going to hit. This guy can really hit the baseball. He may not have much power, mm-hmm. but he can really run.
Well, he manipulates the bat.
He does. He's in a very good position to hit. His hands stay back the entire time until the ball comes in there, and then he's able to make his decision later and able to spray the ball where he needs to spray it.
That's pretty huge. That's a pretty huge part of hitting.
He's not gonna hit for a whole lot of power. He hits for a little bit of power with the aluminum. I don't think he's gonna hit for a whole lot of power. But he can run. He can play center field. He's a guy that he's another one of these mixed guys where some teams are gonna think he does a profile because you know he doesn't hit for enough power. He doesn't throw all that well.
Right.
But some teams are gonna really like how he hits and say, you know what, this guy is gonna be a big leaguer. You know, we're gonna take him. So.
The guy I really want to see is this the kid in New Mexico, Scott Gracie, who is a right-hand pitcher and shortstop, and really he's the team's everyday shortstop, but he's pitched about 6-7 innings this year, and those short looks, and also in a short look as a pitcher, I believe it was in the Mink League last summer, this guy's 90-93, touch of 4 with a plus cutter, and this is a guy who, the comparison that gets thrown around really easily on this guy is Jeremy Accardo. And Jeremy Accardo, one of the stories that we love at Baseball America. We ranked him high in the Alaska League that summer where he'd been mostly a shortstop of Southern Illinois. And then he closed for his team. He had 12 college saves. Went to the Alaska League. Was an all-star in that league as a shortstop. But he did pitch a little bit up there. Signed as a pitcher as a non-drafted free agent by the Giants. We instantly ranked him in the Giants' top 30 that year, basically off 20 career innings of pitching because we heard how good the scouting reports were. And now this is a guy who's a big league, an effective big league reliever. I love the Jeremy Accardo story, so I like the Scott Gracie comps, Jeremy Accardo. And when it comes to pitching, I'm a guy who, show me fastball and fastball command. I want to see either velocity, movement, one of those two, and plus command. And I want to see athleticism. And it sounds like he has those things. So Scott Gracie, very intriguing to me. Don't know where he gets drafted, 7 to 12, somewhere in that range. I think a lot of people are on him, but a very hard guy to scout. Impossible really to cross-check. You have to have a cross-checker really sitting on that team. But he's interesting. He's very intriguing. I think you one added, if I'm not mistaken, one added part of the mix that's confusing is I think he's a draft-eligible sophomore. So Scott Gracie, he could not even get drafted. But suffice it to say, one day he's going to be a pro pitcher, and we're going to see if he's Jeremy Accardo or not. So great podcast, Matt. Took a little long. I know you got to get out of here, but thanks for taking the time. Much more coverage coming next week at Baseball America and baseballamerica.com. So check it out. Until next week, we'll try to squeeze in some of your podcast questions at podcast@baseballamerica.com. Until next week, so long, everybody.